वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 1 We'll just read the chapter summary and the first sloka, and then we'll say something. This is chapter 1, the history of the life of Ajamil. This is the chapter summary. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, there are descriptions of 10 subject matters, including creation, subsequent creation, and the planetary systems. Sukadeva Goswami, the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, has already described creation, subsequent creation, and the planetary systems in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th cantos. Now in the 6th canto, which consists of 19 chapters, he will describe posana, or protection by the Lord. The first chapter relates the history of Ajamil, who was considered a greatly sinful man, but was liberated when 4 order carriers of Vishnu came to rescue him from the hands of the order carriers of Yamaraj. A full description of how he was liberated, having been relieved of the reactions of his sinful life, is given in this chapter. Sinful activities are painful both in this life and in the next life. We should know for certain that the cause of all painful life is sinful action. On the path of fruitive work, one certainly commits sinful activities, and therefore, according to the considerations of Karmakanda, different types of atonements are recommended. Such methods of atonement, however, do not free one from ignorance, which is the root of all sinful life. Consequently, one is prone to commit sinful activities even after atonement, which is therefore very inadequate for purification. On the path of speculative knowledge, one becomes free from sinful life by understanding things as they are. Therefore, the acquirement of speculative knowledge is also considered a method of atonement. While performing fruitive activities, one can become free from actions of sinful life through austerity, penance, celibacy, control of mind and senses, truthfulness, and the practice of mystic yoga. By awakening knowledge, one may also neutralize sinful reactions. Neither of these methods, however, can free one from tendency to commit sinful activities. By bhakti yoga, one can completely avoid the tendency for sinful life. Other methods are not very feasible. Therefore, the Vedic literature concludes that devotional service is more important than the methods of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda. Only the path of devotional service is auspicious for everyone. Fruitive activities and speculative knowledge cannot independently liberate anyone, but devotional service, independent of karma and jnana, is so potent that one who has fixed his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna is guaranteed not to meet the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, even in dreams. To prove the strength of devotional service, Sukadeva Goswami described the history of Ajamil. Ajamil was a resident of Kanyakubja, modern Kanauj. He was trained by his parents to become a perfect Brahmana by studying the Vedas and following the regulative principles. But because of his past, this youthful Brahmana was somehow attracted by a prostitute, and because of her association, he became most fallen and abandoned all regulative principles. Ajamil begot in the womb of the prostitute 10 sons, the last of whom was called Narayan. At the time of Ajamil's death, when the order carriers of Yamaraj came to take him, he loudly called the name Narayan in fear, because he was attached to the youngest son. Thus he remembered the original Narayan, Lord Vishnu. Although he did not chant the holy name of Narayana completely offenselessly, it acted nevertheless. As soon as he chanted the holy name of Narayana, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu immediately appeared on the scene. A discussion ensued between the order carriers of Vishnu and those of Yamaraj. And by hearing that discussion, Ajamil was liberated. He could then understand the bad effect of fruitive activities and also could understand how exalted is the process of devotional service. So text one. I'll just chant myself the Sanskrit and then... Okay. Sri Parikshit Uvacha Nivritti Marga Katita Ado Bhagavata Yata Krama Yogo Palalabdena Brahmana Yad Asam Sritihi. Shri Parikshit Duvacha Nivitti Marga Kathita Adho Bhagavata Yada. Mataji's, please. Sri Parikshit Vacha. Maharaj Parikshit said, Nivritti Marga, the path of liberation, Katita, described, Adav, the beginning, Bhagavata, by your holiness, Yata, duly, Krama, gradually, Yoga Upalabdena, obtained by the yoga process. Brahmana, along with Lord Brahma, after reaching Brahma Loka. Yat, by which way? Asam Sritihi, cessation of repetition of birth and death. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation, Maharaj Parikshit said, O my Lord, O Sukadeva Goswami, you have already described in the second canto the path of liberation, Nivritti Marga. By following that path, one is certainly elevated gradually to the highest planetary system, Brahma Loka, from which one is promoted to the spiritual world along with Lord Brahma. Thus, one's repetition of birth and death in material world ceases. Purport. Since Maharaj Parikshit was a Vaishnava, when he heard the description at the end of the fifth canto of the different hellish conditions of life, he was very much concerned with how to liberate the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya and take them back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he reminded his spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami about the Nivritti Marga, or path of liberation, which he had described in the second canto. Maharaj Parikshit, who at the time of death was fortunate to have met Sukadeva Goswami, inquired from Sukadeva Goswami about the path of liberation at the crucial time. Sukadeva Goswami very much appreciated his question and congratulated him by saying, Varyan esate prishna krita loka hitam nripa atmavit sammatam pumsam srutavyadisu yaparaha. My dear king, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial for all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.1. Parikshit Maharaj was astonished that the living entities in the conditional stage do not accept the path of liberation, devotional service, instead of suffering in so many hellish conditions. This is the symptom of a Vaishnava, vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhivevacha. A Vaishnava is an ocean of mercy, paradukha dukhi. He is unhappy because of the unhappiness of others. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, being compassionate toward the conditioned souls suffering in hellish life, suggested that Sukadeva Goswami continue describing the path of liberation, which he had explained in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. The word asamsritihi is very important in this connection. Samsriti refers to continuing on the path of birth and death. Asamsriti, on the contrary, referred to Nivritti Marga, or the path of liberation, by which one's birth and death cease and one gradually progresses to Brahmaloka, unless one is a pure devotee who does not care about going to the higher planetary systems, in which case one immediately returns home back to Godhead by executing devotional service. Tyaktva deham punarjanmam naiti. Parikshit Maharaj, therefore, was very eager to hear from Sukadeva Goswami about the path of liberation for the conditioned soul. According to the opinion of the Acharyas, the word Krama Yoga Phala Labdena indicates that by first performing Karma Yoga and then Jnana Yoga and finally coming to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, one can be liberated. Bhakti Yoga, however, is so powerful that it does not depend on Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga. Bhakti Yoga itself is so powerful that even an impious man with no assets in Karma Yoga or an illiterate with no assets in Jnana Yoga can undoubtedly be elevated to the spiritual world if he simply adheres to Bhakti Yoga. Maam evaisasi asamsaya, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 8.7, that by the process of Bhakti Yoga one undoubtedly goes back to Godhead, back home to the spiritual world. Yogis, however, instead of going directly to the spiritual world, sometimes want to see other planetary systems, and therefore they ascend to the planetary system where Lord Brahma lives, as indicated here by the word Brahmana. At the time of dissolution, Lord Brahma, along with all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, goes directly to the spiritual world. This is confirmed in the Vedas as followed. Brahmana sahate sarve samprapte pratisanchare parasyante kritatmana pravisyanti parampadam. Because of their exalted position, those who are on Brahmaloka at the time of dissolution go directly back home, back to Godhead along with Lord Brahma. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Deva Amrita Swamini Tinamine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So there is a saying that those who ignore the history are condemned to repeat it. So this is actually a history. Ajamil Upakhyan took place in this place, Kanya Kubja. And this is a very beautiful pastime that shows the danger of associating with the material energy and also the mercy of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Padam Padam Yadvipadam Natesham, that this material world, every step is full of danger. And Prabhupada was asked, when you ask people, how are you? And people say, I'm good. So what does it mean? And Prabhupada said, when people say I'm good, that means nothing horrible has happened yet. Prabhupada said, this is the meaning of when people say I'm good. So this is the position. And also, even for a devotee, it's explained between the material world and the spiritual world, there's a staircase. On each step of the staircase, we are tested very thoroughly. We have to undergo tribulations and trials. In the material world, we are so used to relaxing and taking it easy, and you know, vacation. It's like a big concept outside in the karmi world. In Australia, they call it like beach culture. So everybody is like thinking all the time, when can I take a vacation? How can I relax? How to have a break? That's the mood. Everybody is functioning. Prabhupada also gives the example of the peon in Calcutta. There was this person Prabhupada used to see who would pretend like he is going out to run some errands, but then he would go and sleep in a park all day. And then in the evening he would wake up and then go back to the office and act like he was busy all day, you know. He was very... He was considering his day was successful because he didn't have to do anything. He was resting all day long. Bhagavatam also says like that people, if they can fill their bellies and sleep like long hours, then it's considered like their lives are very successful. So this is the mood that we come from. So when we bring that to Krishna consciousness, we get in trouble. Like it's said, if we are not afraid of Maya, that means we are already in Maya. So, in spiritual life, we are not careful and we are not diligent, then Maya will definitely capture us. The example Bhagavatam gives is the razor's edge. When we're shaving, and if you're not careful, then immediately there's a bloodshed. Immediately there's like a cut. And in modern day, you can think about the example of being on a freeway. When you're on a freeway, especially in America, you're driving in miles, not in kilometers. You're going so fast, or what I call like breakneck speed. So if we are focused, then we go to the destination. But if we are not focused, then immediately we can die. It doesn't take long. Immediately this big crash. So this is the world we're in. This is the kingdom of Maya. This is the world of Maya. And this is like compared to an ocean, Bhava Sagara. When devotees were walking morning walk near a beach, and the devotees told Prabhupada how this ocean looks really beautiful. And Prabhupada said, yes, from a distance it looks beautiful. But then when you go closer, it's a different story. When you get in the water, it's very ferocious, very merciless. I have personal experience of this ocean, the power of ocean. When I was in university, I was just like going with some friends to learn how to surf. And then one of my friends in New Zealand, he was an expert surfer. And he took me in the ocean. There were like so many sharp rocks in the side. So we had to swim to another island kind of area. And then there you catch the waves and like this. So I caught one wave. I was such a beginner. It took me all the way to the bottom of the ocean. When I came up, I was already like gasping for air. And then it washed me into the rocks. And I didn't know what to do after that, because I couldn't climb it. So sharp. It's like everywhere I touch, it's like blood coming up. And the waves are so powerful. It's like washing me into the rocks. So I was like, you know, and then the rescue people had to come pick me up. I didn't know how I survived. It was so cold as well. I couldn't even I started getting cramps, and it was so scary. So this is what Prabhupada said. The ocean looks beautiful from outside, but when you get in the ocean, it's like good luck, you know, sure to die. So Maya is so powerful. Like we will read in the pastime of Ajamil, he was such an amazingly trained brahmana. But he just saw a sudrani and a sudra, a prostitute and a low-class man, they were embracing, and he became agitated. He became disturbed and he lost all his determination to perform brahminical activities. So in the sixth canto, actually in this canto, it says that Maya and Yamaraj, they're actually given access to our heart. Just like when we see each other, we see the externals. But Maya, when he looks at you, then she knows exactly like what's our weakness, what's our desire, what are our material desires. Then Maya custom makes these things for us. It's like in Sydney, I was cultivating this one boy, and then he didn't come for like a couple of programs, so I called him up, said like, what happened, you know, I don't see you. He said, you won't believe that I was after this one girl for years. We grew up together. But then as soon as I started chanting Hare Krishna, she called me. And then she's like, I'm amazed to be able to have her in my life. So, you know, I'm chanting, but like now I have other priorities, so be patient, I'll come back one of these days, yeah. I was just thinking about this, you know, how Maya can see your heart and see exactly what you want. So usually whatever is difficult to obtain, then she says, okay, now whatever you want, take it and forget about Krishna. So Maya and Yamaraj, they can actually see the heart. So much so, it's explained, even somebody like Bharat Maharaj, who was on the Bhava platform, he gave up everything. Bhagavatam says like a person after passing stool leaves the stool room. He gave up everything, wife, kingdom, children, opulences, and went to the forest. Then Maya is thinking, now how can I conquer him? He's already like very detached. Maya sees, oh, this person has got some compassion in his heart, so let me use that to make him fall down. And sets a drama where like this she-deer gives birth to a small deer, and then Bharat Maharaj felt, I'm such a nice guy, you know, without me how will this deer ever survive, and became fully absorbed and lost the battle, became a deer in his next life. So this is the position. We definitely need help. This is something beyond us. This is definitely beyond us. Without Krishna's mercy, it's not possible. Daivyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya, he says. But he says, Krishna says, mam eva ye prabhudyante. By my mercy, then it's possible. Maya metam tarandit. It's like this example given about mercy to illustrate the mercy of the Lord. It's like kind of funny, but there was this atheist. He attended a satsang, like a class like this, and the speaker was saying that how you need the mercy of the Lord to even fast. You need the mercy of the Lord. So he thought this is really like, you know, bogus philosophy, you know. To eat, he needs maybe mercy. But why do you need mercy to fast? So he went home and told his wife, don't cook for me. I'm going to fast and prove all these people wrong. I don't need any mercy. So he went to this park and climbed a tree. And he said, I'm going to be here all day and fast. And then there's this picnic party came by. And they all settled underneath the tree and they opened, you know, their lunch boxes. Samosas and puris and pakoras and chutney and so many sweets and all the fragrance going up, you know. And he's seeing from the tree and he's like drooling, salivating, but he's saying, no, I'm going to make the statement of this preacher wrong, so I'm going to fast. And then this picnic people, they heard some lion roar, so they left everything and ran away. But then he's still looking down and he was still determined, I won't touch it. And then a group of thieves came by. And they were like hiding and running and they were so hungry. And they saw the food and all of them were so tempted to eat. But then the king of the thieves, he said, you guys are foolish. You think somebody is going to leave this here and wait for us to eat? This has been poisoned. I'll show it to you in a minute how what I'm saying is true. So he looked around and he saw this guy up in the tree and he said to him, sir, please come down. You know. So this person was so fearful, he came down and said, eat. And he was like shocked, you know. He's like, no, I cannot eat. I'm fasting. And this thief said, yeah, sure, you're fasting. So they tied him up and shoved the pakoras and samosas in his mouth just to make sure there's no poison there. And he, with the tears in his eyes, he was thinking like, yeah, it's true, you know, you actually need the mercy of the Lord even to fast. Otherwise, you'll be forced to eat. So this is like a very nice example. So this is the position. We need mercy. We definitely need mercy. And we just have to ask for it. Like Christ said, you know, ask and you shall receive. And there's one famous Vaishnava poet, he said, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, there's definitely results. Like Krishna says in the Gita, even if you don't have full realization of Krishna, just by chanting Hare Krishna, you know, you're liberated. You know, Prabhupada writes in the purport that you don't even see Yamaraj in dreams. We just chant offenselessly. But more than that, the Vaishnava poet explains that just like a baby bird is in the nest and the mom, the mother bird has gone away from the nest to pick up some worms and come back. On the way back, a falcon has actually killed the mother bird. So the baby bird is in the nest, he cannot fly, he cannot leave the nest, and without the mother, there's no way the food is going to come back in the nest. So how the baby bird is crying so desperately. So the Vaishnava poet says that that should be the way we cry out for the Lord. And then immediately we see the reciprocation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once we have this mercy, then we get the ability to resist Maya. Like Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, in the pastimes of Bhrigamuni kicking the chest of Vishnu. Prabhupada writes, one's greatness has to be estimated depending on how one tolerates provoking situations. So Prabhupada says, this is how you judge one's greatness, is when you tolerate provoking situations. So that comes through the mercy of the Guru and Krishna. There's this Christian saying that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. Every sinner has a future, that's true only in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we remain sinners, because you cannot give up the tendency to exploit. But in Krishna consciousness, the guru, the spiritual master, and the devotees are always looking out for our welfare. It's a very personal system. It's like in the pastimes of King Prataparudra. We can see how Prataparudra wanted to see Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya refused. He said, "I won't even see kings in dreams." So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in one kirtan. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to faint and King Prataparudra caught him. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked to see who helped him, and then he saw this was this king. And immediately Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, how abominable. I've been touched by a Vishayi." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought it was abominable to be touched by King Prataparudra. But then Prataparudra was so determined to get the mercy that the devotees told him, "You know, you give up the opulences of the king and you pick up the broom and act as a menial servant. And this way, through the service and the mercy of the devotees, you will surely get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya." So, the same King Prataparudra, he pleased Lord Chaitanya so much during the Ratayatra festival. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing and dancing and dancing, and then he went into this garden. What is the name of the garden? Huh? Bala? Bala Kunja. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into this garden, Bala Kunja, to rest. And King Prataparudra started singing beautiful poems glorifying Krishna, beautiful songs. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "You're so nice, can you tell me who you are?" And then King Prataparudra was so scared to tell him who he is, because already he had the experience. But then King Prataparudra said, "My lord, I'm just a servant of a servant of servant of your servants." Which was true, but it was not lying at the same time. He didn't directly say. This way he got the mercy of the Lord. Same thing happened to Amogha. Amogha was actually the son-in-law of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, who was super envious. Very, very envious personality. So Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and his wife, they made this huge feast for Lord Chaitanya. And so many preparations they made. Even Lord Chaitanya was amazed. 100 men with 100 stove, 100 fire burning, cannot make so many preparations. "How did you make like this?" Mahaprabhu asked Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and his wife. So many preparations were made, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down to eat. And Amogha, and Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya was guarding the door to protect, make sure Amogha is not coming in the dining room. And somehow Amogha sneaked in and he saw Mahaprabhu's, plate, like a huge banana leaf, And then Amogha criticized Lord Chaitanya. "What is this? You call yourself sannyasi, but you're eating enough food that 100 men can easily eat." So Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya started to chase him with the stick to beat him up. And the wife of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya started crying, saying, "Let my daughter become a widow, let this sinful rascal die." So with all this mercy Amogha got, he fell really sick. He got a cholera, like non-stop diarrhea. And he was on the verge of dying. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was so dear, he was connected to his dear devotees, like Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and his wife, Mahaprabhu approached him in the deathbed and put his hands in the chest of Amogha and said, "You're a Brahmana. Why you allow this chandala of envy to come in your heart?" So this way, Mahaprabhu healed him, and he became a wonderful devotee. And there is the example of Sivananda Sen, who was showing mercy to a dog that joined the party, but then the dog disappeared, and Sivananda Sen was in anxiety, thinking, where is this dog? I didn't take good care of him, he disappeared. But then when they reached Jagannath Puri, he saw the Lord was getting the coconut pulp from Lord Chaitanya and chanting Hare Krishna. And the Mahaprabhu explained, even the dog of a Vaishnava is very dear to him. So this is the mercy of Krishna consciousness, because it's very personal. It's very personal. It's very, very... it makes a lot of sense. Because the impersonalists, they're actually like hopeless. Hopeless. They think, Aruya Krichena Parampadam Tata Patanti Ada Anadita Yushma Dangriya. Bhagavatam says, they think, impersonalists, they think they're liberated. But because they have no mercy of the Lord and no mercy of the devotees, they fall down. They fall down. It's like this one person visited one of our ISKCON temples. And he said, I really like how you guys worship me in your temples. He's considering himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So with this kind of mentality, they have no help. And they have no clear conception of anything. How are we supposed to fall in love with the sky or something? It's not possible. Also, Krishna explains that just like, you know, sometimes if we don't like somebody, then we give them this impersonal treatment. We give them the cold shoulders. We ignore them, you know, like that. And if that person thinks that's who we really are, that means the person is missing out. Because that's how we treat when we want to ignore somebody. But when we want to be nice to somebody, then we are a completely different person. Similarly, the impersonalists have taken to this impersonal aspect of Krishna and the missing out on all the nectar that is available in personal relationship by serving the devotees and serving Krishna and chanting the holy name. This is another Vaishnava poet. He says, even if a thorn pricks me, the thorn from Vrindavan, if it pricks me, I feel millions of times more pleasurable than merging into Brahman. This is the beauty of our Vaishnava philosophy. So to summarize, the point is that we are in this world full of danger, full of maya and temptations and illusions. And if we want to become Krishna conscious, then we need to somehow or other get the mercy of the Lord and mercy of the devotees. And by doing so, we can overcome all the tests and temptations. So I'll stop here if there any... Achyuta Prabhu. Bala Gandhi? Okay.
So they say the same thing in general about material life. Because you're not expert at negotiating the waves of material nature, therefore you're suffering. But if you become an expert material surfer, then you'll be happy like anything.
Yeah, it's also explained that even if you're an expert swimmer, still you're going to drown. It's just a matter of time. So nobody is ever enjoyed in this world. Nobody has ever done it. Nobody is doing it now. Nobody can ever do it. It's just a matter of time. Like Prabhupada says, it's like building sand castles. The kids, they build sand castles in the beach and the big wave comes and takes it away. Similarly, we think we are so expert swimmers or enjoyers, but then that's what we think till we get diagnosed that we have a tumor or something, you know. or you get a stroke, and then we realize how this body is like a roga mandiram, it's like a temple of pain, and we just repeated birth and death awaiting us.
It's very valid. 1 year ago, the number one surfer in the world was coming here to LA from Hawaii to surf, and he drowned.
Oh, wow.
And he was the number one surfer in the world, number one enjoyer.
That's amazing. Also, I heard, this is a true story, that the person who survived the Titanic accident, he actually drowned in a bowl of soup and died. True story. He was like, handicapped or paralyzed, and he was drinking a bowl of soup, and then he went into the bowl of soup, his head, and he couldn't breathe, he couldn't get up. Prema Sankirtan Prabhu.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you just said, then he like even dogs of devotees. But you know, I hear that some devotees, they don't like, and some other devotees has dogs here in temples. And how you can explain that?
Well, Sivananda Sen was showing mercy to all living entities. I don't think he was keeping it as a pet and, you know, doing all the puja that takes to keep a pet, you know. It's a different mood. Because Sivananda Sen was a liberated person and he wanted to help another soul. But our situation is different. We like, you know, empty inside, so we kind of looking for some kind of happiness by relationships, you know, pets and like this. But it's a different, like we discussed with the Bharat Maharaj, you know, even such a great person appeared as a deer. So keeping a pet and serving living entities out of compassion, but keeping a pet and becoming attached, that's like something else. Mukunda Dutt Prabhu.
Yeah, thank you. Did the chapter summary say that Ajamil fell down because of his past? I thought that's what I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it Prabhupada did briefly mention that he was a well-trained brahmana, but because of his past, like, but he didn't get into it. But I suppose we will read in detail in the chapter. Did you say something, Archita Prabhu?
The dog went into the forest and then he was crying, and when they came they saw that his mouth was completely shut up with arrows because Ekalavya shot the dog. So it's not that the devotees are against animals, it's just that you don't live cheek and jowl with the animals, especially if you're trying to become brahminical. You can't live in a space with cats and dogs and stay clean. It's just not possible. But animals have their place. It's mentioned also about Parikshit, that he gave up his, like you said, he gave everything up. But it included horses, elephants, dogs, all kinds of animals. So devotees can live with the animals and treat them nicely, but you just don't live in close proximity. It's not clean to keep animals in the place where you live and eat. And they have their place outside. That's okay. That's, you know, so we shouldn't keep bringing this up. It keeps coming up over and over and over again. You know, we shouldn't keep bringing it up. It's, you know, some people choose to go that way. We're not going to beat them over the head, but it's just obvious. If you want to be brahminically clean, so you can go on the altar, stuff like that, you can't live in close proximity with animals. It's just not clean. When you're not looking, the cat is all over your stove, all over the pots, and it's just not clean.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. Not to belate the point of the dog, but something came into my mind, because in hearing from Srila Prabhupada, he was talking about the main reason why not to have a dog. In one sense, of course, cleanliness is, you know, an obvious point. But he says because, you know, what we associate with, we have some affection for. And so the danger is if one develops an affection for an animal like that and leaves one's body, it's natural that one may remember that animal because of that affection, and therefore because of that attachment be forced to, you know, attain that body.
That's what they say, the mind is like a slot machine. You don't know where it's going to stop. So whatever we're seeing, the mind is like a camera. We have this iPhone cameras and this camera, Sony cameras. Krishna has created this camera, so powerful. Whatever we're seeing, it's recording. And then at the time of death, if you're not completely confident and comfortably leaving our body, think of Krishna, we're freaking out. We don't know where it's going to stop. So it's a science. It's one last thing from Mukunda Prabhu. Yeah.
Just following up from what he said, it's very similarly, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, your desires are born from your association. So the nature of our desires are determined by the nature of our association.
Jai. Thank you all the Vaishnavas for your attention and comments. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada.